podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of the AI Rogers podcast. I am your host, Leanne Prescott, and with me as usual is my co-host, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, all good down my end. How's things with you, Leanne?
Yep, I'm good. Happy to be discussing Liverpool on the back of a good win in midweek against Stoke. Joining us is a regular on our show, Adam Petruccione. Adam, how are you?
Doing good, Leanne. Thanks for the invite. Just ready to delay your audience with some Americanisms.
Let's kick off your article then, which is a really good piece discussing Liverpool's ability to close out games. So talk us through your article and your thinking behind it and really honing in on that Stoke game and the games previous to it and what we've seen from Liverpool over the course of this season.
Yeah, so I think the last time I talked with you guys, it was after the West Ham game, and we were sort of, it was a big tactical change, right? Because then we were coming off of the Stoke debacle, and we're wondering how much of that we would see going forward, or how much of the 4-4-2 or 4-2-2-2, whatever you want to call it, we would see going forward. And we haven't seen that consistently, but we've seen definitely a change in tactics that sort of incorporates some of the ideas that we saw in that match. Here against Stoke, I started writing this article before Stoke, and there was a trend that was sort of alarming to me that I wasn't sure if people had noticed, that in the last 10 minutes of any Premier League match this year, we haven't scored at all. And some of our competitors, some of our rivals, United, has already scored 11 goals in the last 10 minutes of Premier League matches. I think after Sterling scored, City's up to 9, I think so. So it's a little bit alarming, and it kind of goes along with the discussions that everybody's been having recently in terms of Klopp's rotation or lack thereof and his late substitutions. So basically, like, none of those late substitutions really are working in terms of they're not scoring. And a lot of them, when I look back at it, a lot of them are attacking subs, you know, whether it's like Solanke or Oxlade-Chamberlain or somebody else coming along that front three. So they hadn't been scoring. And so that's, you know, when you look at what I sort of focused in on was the five draws we've had in the Premier League. And when you look at when we're just on the outside of the top four of the Champions League spots. So we're on the outside looking in at this point. And you look at those draws, and it'd be nice if we had a couple more points out of those. And all of those matches, you know, I sort of went through each one in terms of the timeline, and it was like, you know, we scored in the 35th minute and then didn't score after that, or we scored in the, you know, 35th and the 50th and then didn't score after that. And you know, you look at like the Watford game, we gave away the lead late, and Chelsea most recently. So the interesting thing watching Stoke was that it was a totally different scenario, right? We had Salah in reserve. Maybe that's cheating, I don't know. But we brought him on at, I think, the 65th minute. He scores 10 minutes later. Then he scores after another 6 minutes again. And yeah, so that was the first time in the 83rd minute. That was the first time that we'd scored that late in the Premier League all season. So I guess I'm curious to see going forward, does he learn a lesson from that? Does Klopp learn a lesson from that? Does he need to learn a lesson from that? Does he hold maybe like, does he try to rotate the front three more so that he always has one of the strongest players in reserve to bring on late? You know, and I think it's interesting when you look at the pace of Mane and Salah that, you know, it could be more potent having them on, having one of them on for the last 30 minutes of a match rather than having both of them on for the first 60 minutes of a match, especially when you look at this December-January period with all the congested fixtures. So that's sort of the gist of it, you know, and I went into some other issues that sort of surround that in terms of not rotating, and sort of the knock-on effects from that in terms of not knowing what we have with some of the players. You know, especially we're starting to get short in defensive midfield in terms of, you know, Henderson looks like he's hit a wall a bit, and then you got Chan's contract issue, and Grujic has barely played at all, and now his agent's making noise, and Ajari, I also brought him into the article, and he hasn't been, he's just been in the under-23s exclusively this year. So so I just wonder, going into January, how do we really know who to target? How do we even know what we have if those guys aren't being rotated in, at least at a minimal level? So that's the gist of it. Let me know what you guys think, and I'll try to come back in with some comments.
Yeah, so I think it's a really, really good article, as I said, and you cover a lot of points in your piece. So just to start us off then, as you said, Liverpool have been ahead several times this season. You look at the opening game against Watford when we dropped 2 points, then there was the draw against Burnley and against Newcastle as well. So it has been a recurring theme this season and in seasons before that. That's really important to note as well. So I guess the first question I want to ask, and I'll start with you, Adam, is it a case of a lack of a backbone? Because we've had this discussion in the aftermath of the Sevilla result when we're looking in the Champions League. We were 3 goals ahead and we come away 3-3. So we'll go on to talk about the substitutions and the game management aspect of it. But does it come back to this idea that we can't really do the ugly side of our game? We can't shut the opposition out, and we don't have that backbone that maybe the likes of Chelsea or Man City do?
Yeah. You know, I think we probably come into this when we talk about the Moreno article as well. But yeah, I mean, I do think that that's an issue. I think it's, I don't know if you want to call it a backbone issue. Certainly we're not the most physical team in the world. But I think it's an issue of when we want to sit back, when we want to play some of these tactics that we're finding out could work that we played in against West Ham. I think the opposing teams have thought, okay, well, if they're going to sit back, we're going to test some of these guys like Moreno. Like, I think Moreno has done a great job for the majority of the year, but now that we're changing tactics a bit, it's a little bit of an awkward fit for him, and he is not great when he's backed up. And he just has a tough time dealing with crosses and things of that nature. But if he's pressing along with everybody else, then we can see some of the successes that we had early last year. And I think that sort of goes across the line like that. You know, Henderson does not usually stay stationary in his number six position. And, you know, if everybody's on board with that, if everybody's closing down their man, closing down the ball, then that's okay. But if not, then there's a huge gap behind him, and then we see some of the chaos that we've seen in some of the other games. You know, and it just sort of becomes contagious, right? Because then if that creates a little chaos in front of the 18-yard box, then Mignolet comes out and maybe he has a swipe at a runner like he did last against Stoke. So, I think it's just we have to decide on a couple styles of how we want to play, and then recruit players that fit that or can go a couple of different ways. And I think we're struggling with that now, with players being compatible with a couple of the different systems that we want to switch in and out of.
Can I jump in here on the because I think this issue of Liverpool conceding goals from a leading position, I don't think it's a backbone thing. We don't concede that many late goals. I mean, if you look at this season specifically, right? I'm just looking at the games that you've specifically highlighted there, Adam. So we've got the Watford game. That was a fluke offside goal. I mean, the goal was miles offside. That's just, you know, you can't really do much about that. Against Burnley and against Newcastle, both those goals were in the first half. Spartak, again, goals in the first half. So those were just defensive issues rather than anything to do with backbone or holding on to a lead, that kind of thing. I think they were just general defensive issues, those 3 games. United was obviously a 0-0, so that doesn't count at all. So actually, you're looking at the only games that I can see these clear issues in are actually severe games. I mean, the Chelsea game, that was a fluke goal. You know, you can't mitigate for goals like Willian's goal in the 88th minute of a match.
That's sure, but I would say...
My point is just that the you look at the 2 games this season where we really fallen apart when having a lead are the two Sevilla games. Those are the only two I can look at and go, yeah, there was probably a mental element there. And that's almost a mental hangover from the 2015-16 Europa League final. And that's just something where it's just got worse. Because after we bottled it in the Europa League final, we then played Sevilla at Anfield and we should have won that game, missed a penalty, panicked, lost our heads, drew that game. All of that is going to be bubbling under the surface when you get to that 3-0 lead at halftime. Sevilla score, especially when you consider Moreno, who we're going to come to later, was one of the key issues in that. He's an ex-Sevilla player who still, the majority of the flack that he gets is for that Europa League final. Like, as a player, I think a lot of Liverpool fans still, if you ask them why they don't like Moreno, they'll say Europa League final against Sevilla. So that, I think, I can totally understand how it was a mental thing or a holding on to a lead issue against Sevilla, but I don't think there's any other game this season where it's really overly applicable. I think we have some general defensive issues. I'm not sure that's necessarily even a mental thing or holding on to the lead thing or even a style of play thing. I think that's just, there were two or three games this season that we drew 1-1 because of stupid defensive errors. I think the Watford game is an interesting one, but obviously that was an offside goal in the 93rd minute. There's not much you can do about
that. Right, I hear you, Tom. Like, my article is more focusing on the lack of productivity from the offensive.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come to that in a minute.
Attacking
standpoint, there's clearly something there, yeah.
There we go. There's my first Americanism of the night. But from an attacking standpoint is where I think that we've sort of fallen apart late in games. I hear you. It's just, and I personally, if you want to get into the Moreno stuff, I personally don't really blame him for the Sevilla loss in the Europa League final, because once they got past Moreno there, they went through like the entire defense.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, we'll come to Moreno later.
Everybody everybody got shredded on that particular on the equalizing goal there. So
yeah,
but anyways, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm just curious to see. You know, here's the big thing, just to like boil it down, is that like you look at all these games, we've been subbing on the 75th minute on. 75 minutes would have been like early in a lot of these games, right? So then this Salah substitution was at least 10 minutes earlier than that. And, you know, it just seemed like he got a chance. You know, like I said, he scored after 10 minutes. So he sort of warmed up into the game, got up to everybody else's pace, and then blew everybody away. But, you know, if that had been a case where it had been Klopp's usual substitution pattern, he comes on at like the 80th minute or something, does that ever happen? Does he ever get that second goal or even the third goal? So, you know, and I think you've seen that in a lot of these matches where it's just somebody's being substituted on. I mean, the Chelsea was extreme, right, where Mane comes on for like the last minute or something. But
we didn't need Mane before then, before the 89th minute and that game.
Yeah, but I think you get into a situation where, you know, our defensive flaws are going to be there to some extent, even if these guys are playing at the top of their game and we're going to concede some goals.
That was just a fluke.
Right. But I'm just saying, but also in Chelsea, which is very similar to Watford, you know, whether those goals were flukes or offsides or whatever, we were under like heavy pressure, right? I mean, at a minimum, you can say that. And if you have a fresh attacking player coming on that has had time to get into the game, then does that take pressure off of the defense? Do we have a better outlet ball? You know, so that's, I think, you know, until January or until whenever we can bring in more improvements on the defensive end, then you know, then we're sort of stuck with these guys, right? So it just becomes like, how do you balance that out? You know, and some of it's going to be with pressing, and some of it's going to be with just being so dangerous on attack that teams won't commit people forward, right?
Part of the issue on the sub side of things for me is just that I just think it's an unnecessary criticism. Like, this is my take. I think a lot of people get really het up about the fact Klopp doesn't make subs. I don't really care. It's quite rare that I'll watch a game and be screaming for a sub after the hour mark. I just think the hour mark's too early. I generally don't think Liverpool need to make subs really before the 75th minute, unless Klopp wants to make a specific tactical change, which is fair enough, but I don't see why we would. It's slightly different when you've got someone of Mo Salah's quality on the bench. And I think to an extent, I can see what you mean about the Chelsea game. We've got Mane to come on. But, like, I don't think it's that. Like, Solanke, is he really going to be that much of an attacking improvement on someone like Firmino? Probably not really. Oxlade-Chamberlain, is he good off the bench? Not a lot of evidence to suggest that, to be honest with you. He seems to be benefiting more and more from starting regularly, but I don't think we've really seen much to suggest he's a good impact sub. The only times I've seen Klopp make a change reasonably early that I think has worked has been putting Milner in. I think that's generally quite a good sub that I think he's done quite a few times this season, using Milner to shore up the midfield. He's done that two or three times reasonably early on in the game when we've got a good situation going. So that's the only thing I could really think of where I think, yeah, that's something I'd want to see doing. If we had Mane and Salah on the bench regularly, which obviously we haven't had this season, then yeah, I can understand bringing one of them on regularly. But the only game where you could say he could have brought Mane on earlier was against Chelsea. But in that situation, I'm not sure I'd want him to make an attacking change. I'd rather he made the defensive change. I think it's also worth noting someone like Emre Can would be a good defensive sub to come on. He's not been fit over the last couple of weeks, bolstering the numbers in midfield. So that's another issue. It's just for me, when people say...
Yeah, I mean, I wish Klopp would come out and say, this is why I don't sub early, or sub on 60 minutes, because...
He has said this before. He said he doesn't want to make the team panic, because this is something we've seen before. This is something we've seen this Liverpool team do before, where after an hour or so, if the game's not quite going their way, if it's a draw or if we're losing, they will panic, and that is only exacerbated by early subs. If Klopp's thrown on Daniel Sturridge after 60 minutes, the team are thinking, shit, we need a goal. Then you start getting shots from all angles. Klopp's saying, by not making the subs, and this is something that he said to the crowd as well, get behind the team. Don't let the team... You need to create an atmosphere where the team are thinking, we've got this game under control. It's just about putting the ball in the back of the net. And it's exactly the same with subs. He likes to create an attitude where the team are thinking, all right, we don't need a striker to come off the bench and score because we've got what it takes out here, so we don't need to start panicking. And the other reason I think Klopp doesn't make a lot of early subs, and this is certainly one thing that I've noticed, is that if a sub's not going to improve the team, which generally it won't, because in 9 times out of 10, you look to play your strongest possible 11, unless you're rotating, in which case you don't, you know, rotation's slightly different, but I don't think we've rotated enough this season for it to be relevant. Just leave the best players out there. Like, leave your best players on the pitch. Give them the best opportunity to score. That's my impression on it. Anyway, if you've got a front four already on the pitch of Mane, Salah, Firmino and Coutinho, why change that? Those are the best players out there possible to score the goals. So why would you change it? If you want to make a tactical defensive change, totally get it. But I think that's slightly different, in my opinion anyway.
I think it's hard though for a player to come on with 10, 15 minutes left and really make an impact on the game. I think that one of the examples I can think of, and I'm sure this will get a laugh from Tom and Ollie if he's listening, Oxlade-Chamberlain made an impact against Man U a few weeks back, but can we expect him to come on and score the winner? No, not really. Not when the game is winding down in the way it was. And I think that's really where the criticism stems from. If we as fans and on the sidelines can see that the game is winding down or that we're struggling, because there were times against Stoke where we were up against it, they were winning those second balls and the pressure was building on us before Firmino and Salah came on. So it could be a sign that Klopp is changing. I do agree with Tom in the sense that in this case, I think it was more the personnel we had on the bench was of a higher caliber, so we could bring them on, and that's why they were able to change the game. But I'd be interested to hear what Adam thinks in terms of, is this Klopp changing and learning and adapting, or is it because, as Tom says, we had Salah on the bench and given his form, given what he's done for Liverpool already, we had to bring him on and give him as much time as possible in order to really propel us further ahead of Stoke.
Yeah, I mean, I fear that it's because Salah was on the bench and that he wouldn't have done that if it was anybody else. You know, Tom, the thing that worries me, and I've said this before with other examples with Klopp, and, you know, I love the guy, but, you know, he certainly takes a lot of risks, and that's the good thing about him, but I guess it's the bad thing as well. And that, you know, if he's saying he doesn't want to sub at 60 minutes because he doesn't want to make the team nervous, I mean, he's basically saying every other manager in world football is wrong and he's got some specific idea
that's right. No, he's not saying that.
Well, I mean, everybody else makes subs consistently at 60 minutes, right?
No, they don't. They don't always make consistently subs. And here's the thing, it's a Liverpool specific thing. because this is a Liverpool-specific mentality anyway. So I'm not saying that, I'm not saying every other manager is wrong, but every other manager, no other manager will know the Liverpool squad as well as Klopp does. That's the point I'm trying to get at, because we have seen this Liverpool team panic. We have seen, we have, well, no, the thing is, we've seen them do it.
That's not fantastic either.
No, it's not. We've seen this happen. We've absolutely seen this happen over the last 12 months, where after 60 minutes of a game, the crowd don't get behind the teams, and the team starts to panic, and if Klopp makes a sub, it's going to exacerbate the situation. And that's not to say that other managers are wrong, because not every other manager in the world makes early subs. But it is a Klopp-specific thing. Sure. Like, it is. Like, and it's a Liverpool-specific thing as well. That's what I'm trying to get at. So I don't think it's fair to make the comparison. I think if any other manager was managing Liverpool and they read the situation that way, I think I could... I'm not saying Klopp's perfect about this, because I do think Klopp could make subs earlier. But equally, I think Klopp's never going to appease this fan base, because everyone's always... I've watched games where people have been screaming for subs after half an hour, screaming for subs off. Everyone wants Klopp to make two changes at half time. That's just not practical. And it's like,
If Liverpool's winning, then I think the fan base will be fine, you know, pretty much regardless. But when we're not, that's what I'm saying, I guess, is he's really putting himself out there in so many different areas. And if we go through a long period then of not doing what we're supposed to be doing, or what our goals are, achieving our goals, then you know, I just worry that he's piling up a list of these things where he's like the only person in the world that does this. So
you're massively over exaggerating.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you just look at the draws, right? And I put those out there because you think draws,
and I don't
right,
think
but all those all those subs, reasons for them. All those subs are on average like the 80th minute, right?
Yeah, but I'm sure there are plenty of results Liverpool have come out well in where Klopp hasn't made any subs either. As I said, you look at the Watford game, it was actually a Klopp substitute, Gomez, that made the error that led to the goal in the first place. So if Klopp had left Trent on, that wouldn't have happened, you could argue. Also, as I said, that's a 93rd minute fluke. Burnley, here's the thing, right? If you've got a front three of Firmino, Mane and Salah on, right? That's your front three, and you've got half an hour to go, and it's, say, 1-1, right? Because that's a couple of... So that's happened, say, two or three times this season. We've got that front three of either Coutinho, Firmino, Mane, Salah. Who do you want to bring off of that front three? Do you go super attacking with half an hour to go against a team that can probably counterattack with our defence? Because that's something that you've suggested you don't want to see happen. Overexposure of the defence. Do you then bring off Sadio Mane after half an hour? Because that's going to go down well and has gone down well so often this season. Bringing off Sadio Mane and bringing on Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain for half an hour, that is not going to sit well. Especially if Oxlade-Chamberlain doesn't make an instant impact off the bench. It's just for me, at least, I don't think it's necessary.
Right, you can't play that front three all the time, and then
obviously you can't. But there are games when you rotate, and that's why you want to be, because Klopp's, if you're three nil up at half time, you can make subs after an hour, after 75 minutes, and we've seen Klopp do that this season where we've been.
I think the lineup that he put out against Stoke works, because particularly with Oxlade-Chamberlain and Solanke, you know, they might not be as potent as the other guys that you would have starting, but they certainly can run their asses off, and they certainly are going to press, and they're going to wear out the other team, right? So if you wear out the other team, and then whether it's Mane that sits or Salah that sits, and then you bring them on, and they look like Salah looked against Stoke.
Yeah.
I completely agree. I think against the Stokes of the world, I'd like to see him repeat what he did last night. So, you know, we'll see.
I totally agree. My point is just that if you've already got your best players on the pitch, do you really want to bring on Oxlade-Chamberlain and Solanke on the hour mark for Firmino or Salah? Because
The issue with that is you get the knock-on impact of, you know, the guys on our bench. We just don't even know. Like Grujic, I don't even know what you're gonna do with him. If Chan leaves, or if he forces his way out in January or something,
who cares?
Nobody knows what they have. And
honestly, who cares? He didn't cost that much. He barely cost anything, and he's like our eighth choice central midfielder.
But
I'd rather we just brought in another centre midfielder. We've got plenty of talented players.
Okay. That works too. I'm good with that.
they're playing, but the point, my point is they're playing for the under-23s and they're training with Klopp. If Klopp thought they were good enough to be getting games now, they'd be getting games now. You look at someone like Oxlade-Chamberlain and Solanke, they're getting the opportunities now because Klopp is starting to rotate. We are starting to see it better. Don't get me wrong, I don't think Klopp's rotation policy is perfect, but I think that's a rogue. But I think when you talk about the likes of Oxlade-Chamberlain, Solanke, Grujic not getting enough minutes, that's a rotational issue for me, not an impact sub issue. Because I don't think you're going to see much more from Oxlade-Chamberlain in 25, 30 minutes than you are in 15, 20.
No, that's fair enough. I think it's more of like a striker issue. I think it's more when you're bringing on Sturridge or Solanke or Mane or Salah or any of those guys, and probably Coutinho as well. Yeah. You know, those real like flair players probably need more time to warm into the game than others.
One of the points I just want to ask both of you is, in the article, Adam, obviously you talk about, and we have also talked about, Salah being used on the bench and Mane being used on the bench in terms of the fixture period. And while we don't mean specifically those two, is that something that maybe you want to see Klopp do? Because I know there's a lot of people that will say you play your best 11 from the start, and you know, if they can't do the job, fair enough, you gave it your best crack. But there is an interesting concept in terms of the pace that they have to bring on against these tired legs. So I'd just like to see whether you think that's something that Klopp could utilise in a busy fixture period. Because Salah, you know, he's a great player, but can he play every single game back-to-back? Should he be playing every single game back-to-back? It comes in with Moreno and Robertson, which we'll talk about later. But is it not this idea that actually if you rest some players at some stages, such as that Stoke game, you have the ability to bring them on later on, It up against tired legs, and that in itself is a benefit.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stoke is the perfect test case for that. I mean, we're going to face a lot of Stokes over the next 5 or 6 weeks or so. I think you have to play either, you have to start with either Mane or Salah or them and Firmino. I mean, those guys have just, they put in a ton of work already this season, and if you start out with one of them or two of them on the bench, in those types of competition against, say, like the lower 10 of the Premier League, then you're able to bring them on as an impact sub. And, you know, I mean, if Oxlade-Chamberlain can't hold his own for 60 minutes, being like a £35 million signing, then we did something wrong. All right, so I mean, you got to be able to at least give that a shot. And then, you know, we went through large portions of last season with just Mane or not even Mane, and got through that okay. So you'd think with one of them, with one of the speedy wingers, and Oxlade-Chamberlain on the other side, or Sturridge and Firmino, or however you want to fill out the other two, that should be just fine for 60 minutes against that caliber of club. And then you bring on everybody if you need to for the last 30. And I think I'd take my chances in a lot of those games. And then you're going to, against the real critical sides, against in the Champions League games and things like that, then you have your choice of your full-strength squad, and that's what you go with.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. You know, you rotate. I was calling for rotation before the Stoke game. I think it's pretty much the perfect time to rotate. I think Klopp rotated pretty perfectly. I would like to see a little bit more fullback rotation, but like that's the, you know, it's a minor quibble, isn't it? Like, who cares when the fullbacks are rotated? So, is there anything else you wanted to add on this, Adam? Because I think we're going to move on to talk about Albi.
Yeah, let's do it. Cue up Albi.
Okay, Moreno, I'm going to take on the hosting chair for this one to give Leanne a chance to get stuck into the conversation. So Henry Jackson has written a really good article on Moreno, saying about basically one bad game. I mean, a lot of people have seen having a similar opinion, but it's really well put by Henry, basically. So a lot of people have been criticising Moreno for quite a long time before this season. And then suddenly you've got this massive turnaround. Moreno's back in the team. Everybody's really happy that he's starting to play well. But people are waiting. And then as soon as the moment comes when Moreno makes a couple of horrendous errors, because let's be fair, there were a couple of horrendous errors against Sevilla, gets himself booked, maybe could have got himself sent off, made two really, really sloppy mistakes that led to goals. and then suddenly he's back to being public enemy number one. Suddenly Moreno has, you know, I think he says a lot of people have just been suddenly dropped, waiting for this. You know, they've been waiting to say I told you so. They've been waiting to cackle at their that they predicted all along that Moreno's just as bad as he ever was, that he needs to be dropped for Robertson ASAP. And I think what Henry's basically getting at is that Moreno has almost been scapegoated to an extent, in the sense that people have just been waiting for this era to come along, which is it's really unfair the way a lot of people have treated him. So I'll let you jump straight in on this, Adam. What were your thoughts? What do you think about Moreno so far this season, and whether or not a lot of the criticism that he's received after this Sevilla game was justified, and to what extent it was justified?
I mean, Moreno has to be given a lot of credit, first of all, for the turnaround that he's made, and that he didn't ask for a transfer someplace else. It's amazing, and I think in a high press system, he's great. He's great defensively. I think the team has changed. I think we've touched on this on earlier podcasts. I get the sense, watching a lot of these games closely, that the team's just not as fit as they were last year, for whatever reason. Who knows? But you can see it in the distance covered stats. It's just not quite the same as it was, and that tells you that they're not really pressing the same. And, I think that's where we've sort of gotten caught out a lot of times, whether it's Lovren getting caught out or Matip or anybody in that back line, where Moreno's really sort of held his own, and credit to him for that. But I just think, we talked about in the last segment after the Tottenham game, we had to like switch the focus a little bit. And I just don't think he's not really fitting into this system. So it's not his fault. If we're going to go back to the high press or something, then keep him around. But I don't see why we're not rotating Robertson in more when we're playing a more conservative system, because he's just, if we're playing, we have to be pressing really high, or at least at the edge of our 18-yard box for him to be effective. When we sit back the way that we have in some of these games, he becomes targeted. You know, the other teams aren't sleeping on this either, and they're going to at least test him, and then they test him over and over again. And, you know, he may not even be doing that bad. It's just that they're going at him every time, you know, and then ultimately he loses confidence, and then you have a whole issue on your hands. But, you know, I was listening to Jan Molpe on the AI Pro podcast the other day, and he sort of like grouped a lot of these Rodgers era guys together, where like Albie, Henderson, Mignolet, and Lovren. And, you know, we're pretty sure at this point what their potential highs and lows are. And, you know, we also know something about their consistency and how often their consistency sort of lets themselves down, lets the club down at times. And he said, and I agree with him, I just don't know how far you're going to get with all those guys still on the team. And then you look positionally where they play, they're all right next to each other. They all make a nice little sort of triangle. Or I guess there's four of them, so it's more like a rhombus, I guess, in the left corner there. And it's just, that's not great. That's not a recipe for winning when you have all those guys and all of them have consistency issues. And I think, to his credit, Albie's picked his game up to the point where he's probably the least problem of all those guys. But still, I don't know. At least a couple of that group has to be changed out if we really have ambitions. And yeah, it just depends on what Klopp's idea is going forward of what system he wants to play. There's some kind of clarity, you know, for the transfer committee, for everybody, the scouts for Liverpool. There needs to be like some clarity on that going forward, because, you know, I think you need more of, like, for what we've been playing post Spurs, I think you need like a more of a two-way player. I saw like some conversation on Twitter with some of the Anfield Index people where people were talking about Jonas Hector again, and not that he's the guy, but you need somebody like that and Robertson might be that guy. I have no idea because we've only seen him play once. But you need somebody that's able to defend that far back effectively and give you something going forward. And I just don't think he's that. So if we want to play the style going forward, then Elway's not the guy, unfortunately.
Okay, so Leanne, I'll give you a chance to respond to some of that. So do you think that it would be, do you think it's fair to label Moreno inconsistent based on what we've seen from him this season? And I guess the other thing is, where do you see Robertson fitting? And do you think he is the more defensive fullback? Or do you think his performances at Hull, where he was used more as a wingback, do you think that indicates that maybe he's not more of a defensive fullback at all?
Well, I'm in complete agreement with Henry, actually. I think I've been a massive critic of Moreno for a long time. At times last season, I just didn't want to see him play for Liverpool again. I thought it was sort of like watching him self-destruct every time he stepped foot on the pitch, because he seemed to just lose his head every time he got into the defensive third. He was great going forward, but then he just lost it. But this season, it's been a complete change around. He looks a lot more mature, a lot more controlled in defence. We've seen a lot less brain farts from him. And he's still got that attacking ability going forward. We've seen him deliver some really, really good balls into the box and give us that extra edge, as Henry says. The best way to summarise it for me is the fact he's gone from flipping bottles on the bench. I can't remember what game it was, but I know he failed with his bottle flip, to getting an international call up to Spain. So for me, that really says it all about how far Moreno has progressed. And that shows how consistent he's been this season, because he hasn't really been targeted by other teams. And anytime he's been given a job to do, he's done it pretty well. He's shown that consistency and he's shown he can be depended on for the most part. Of course, there are going to be people that are always waiting in the lurch to say, "I told you so," when he messes up. And that was the case against Sevilla. He did make some awful, awful mistakes, and he did lose his head again against Sevilla for the second time this season. But for me, his position wasn't really in doubt against Chelsea. I didn't think he warranted being dropped, and I didn't really expect Klopp to. I know he had this conversation with Carl as well. But Moreno has really, really progressed, and to chuck him out of the team, and those calls were lazy. They were silly, because you don't chuck a player out the first sign of trouble when he's progressed in the way that Moreno has. So yes, he's still got mistakes in him, and yes, I can understand people saying, well, how can you rely on Moreno, how can you keep giving him chances and all of this, but he's shown that progression. And I think if we take that for granted and we just push him out of the squad, then what kind of message does that send to these players? In terms of Robertson, I don't agree that he's more defensive at all. I think what we saw of him during pre-season, and as you said, Tom, at Hull City, he loves to get forward, just like Moreno. He loves to whip in those crosses, and actually it's the defensive side of his game that he needs to work on. Now, I'm not sure why he's not being played, whether it's an injury or whether he still needs time to adapt, whether Klopp doesn't think he can do it defensively quite yet. I'm not sure. But in terms of this, he's more defensive than Moreno, so he should be played argument. I don't see that at all. I think they're both very, very modern fullbacks. They love to attack. They love to get forward. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But you can't say, oh, chuck in Robertson because he'll be sturdier defensively, because he will still be bombing up the line in the 88th minute, just like Moreno does.
The area where I agree with you there, Leanne, is that, you know, he's very strong attacking in terms of Moreno, but he's not even getting to do that recently. I mean, in terms, he's not flying all the way down the flank and putting in crosses, you know. So you just see, it almost seems like a waste to me. You know, I could certainly see using him in that way if we like shifted the whole back line over to sort of compensate, and plenty of teams do that. It's not unusual. So, but it, for whatever reason, Klopp was having both fullbacks sort of hold. And it just seems an odd match for me.
Maybe it's because Moreno's proved himself defensively this season. I mean, just in my head, he's been our best defender this season. Like, from a defensive point of view, any of our back five have consistently performed better than Moreno on the defensive side of the game, not just as a player. Leanne, would you agree with that? Or do you think someone else has been significantly better? Do you think it's a case that Moreno's earned the right to be a more to operate in that more defensive role by playing well in it, or do you think that it's just a case of he's the best option?
No, I agree with you. I think it comes back to this idea of his improvement and his development. He is more mature. He can be relied upon a lot more. I'm not saying he has no more mistakes in him and it's a miracle revelation. Sevilla showed he's still got progression to make, but I think you're completely right in what you're saying. He has shown that he can be depended on a lot more than he was last season. And it's kind of sad that he is one of these players that is scapegoated, and it's almost so when he does something right, we don't really appreciate or give him the credit he deserves because we're waiting for him to slip up again.
Yeah, I agree. I just think people are waiting, you know, people waiting for the error. What do you think about that, Adam? Do you think that there is a better option? Do you think there is a better defensive option at left back available? Because there's no evidence that Robertson is that option, to be blunt.
Sure. No, I mean, I think you'd be in a similar situation. He's slightly bigger than Alvi, right? So, you know, you'd have that. But, you know, Tom, you and I have talked on the WhatsApp chat about some crazy ideas of putting Gomez back to the left-hand side where he was under Rodgers and then playing Trent on the right. You know, I don't know. It's something. But
Trent's not more defensive either, though. We've got three really attacking fullbacks. Arguably, yeah. Moreno's more defensive than both Trent and Robertson. You'd be hard pushed.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having one of them. There's nothing wrong with having one of them go forward. It's just an odd way that we're playing now with an attacking fullback that doesn't attack. I don't know. Yeah, he's certainly not the biggest issue that we have at the moment, but he can be. And I don't know. You don't know if he's completely over some of the issues or not. I mean, Tommy, you mentioned earlier some of the mental frailties that the squad has. I don't know. You know, he's still relatively young, so who knows what he's capable of growing into. But you know, I'd like to see Moreno used to his strengths, just like we've had this conversation about other players in different areas of the pitch. And you know, I'd like to see Moreno bombing forward because that's what he does. He causes chaos high up the pitch, whether it's from the press without the ball or whether he has the ball to put in a cross or even a left-footed shot, whatever. So I don't hate the player. It just comes down for me to the style of play and what we want to do. And he's not versatile as the thing. He's not versatile enough to where it works with the way that we're sort of flip-flopping systems. And, you know, you could say, like, he's been our best defender and he's only made XYZ mistakes. But, I mean, when you look at the top of the table and look at the goals allowed column, I mean, Moreno's probably had that many errors that have led to goals by himself. You know, so it's sort of like a low bar at Liverpool in terms of defensive abilities.
Has he made a single defensive error at the defensive goal in the Premier League this season? Because okay, I don't think he has. I could be wrong.
Sevilla, yeah, two.
Take the 15 minutes Sevilla out of it, because that's obviously the point we're trying to get at here. Has he made a single defensive mistake that led to a goal in the Premier League this season? Genuine question, because I don't think he has.
I don't know. I mean, we always get attacked from that side, right? We always get attacked from Lovren's side, and it could be Lovren, it could be Henderson.
Statistically, we don't, though. Statistically, it's a lot more even this season than it was last year.
Sure.
I think it's about a third now on each side. I know they did this on UP a few weeks ago, and actually they showed that actually it's a lot more even. We're not getting targeted on down the left side anywhere near as much as we were last year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Sevilla series of errors is sort of just the nightmare that you worry about with them, because it had everything, right? It's like we were backed up. He's defending as deep as Moreno is ever going to defend. And then he creates the corner, and then he doesn't defend the corner, and then we lose a goal from that. You know? So it's sort of like he makes like multiple errors that lead to a goal. And I don't know. You know, listen, I'm not saying that he's like completely error prone this year, but it's certainly, you know, you can't just if you're looking at Liverpool trying to become a team that wins trophies again consistently, then I just think, you know, maybe he's the last one of the four that you'd get rid of, but like, you really can't just play nice with a lot of these players anymore. It's just that there comes a time where you got to play more hardball if we want to really win things. You can't just say, well, I hope this guy puts it together next year. It just seems like there's a lot of that goes on. And Albie might be the one that we got right. But then, you know, Mignolet still is inconsistent. Lovren still inconsistent. So, and Henderson, I don't know what's affecting him now, whether it's injury or he's just inconsistent as well. So,
Leanne, your thoughts on that? Do you think that Moreno should be put in the same category as Lovren Mignolet in the can't be redeemed, needs to be removed, can't be trusted sense? Do you think that this season he's done enough to demonstrate that he is someone that can be relied upon to be maybe not a title winner, but certainly a trophy winner and certainly a top four contender? Or do you think that he needs to be upgraded at some point, and at the moment he's just, you know, holding down an end?
Well, I think if you'd asked me that last year, I would have probably laughed at you and said, get him out. In terms of right now, I think Moreno is probably the last person that needs replacing in our defence. Obviously, Joel Matip, I wouldn't replace him. I have my questions about Matip, but hopefully when we see him with someone like Van Dijk, that they go away. I think what's important to note is Moreno's, he's come out, he had a very, very bad game against Sevilla, but he turned it around again. He showed good promise, good reactions to get back to his pretty much his better self, for want of a better word, in the following game, where he really, really got into his tackles. I think he had equal assists to some of the midfielders or something, or positive passes, something like that. And so he showed a good response. And again, that points to this maturity and this development. And so for me, I wouldn't say that he's going to win us the league title. I wouldn't say that if you offered me a new left back, I would turn him down and say, oh, we've got Moreno, we're absolutely fine. But I think that it's a far less pressing matter than it was a year ago. And I think that's what needs to be recognised. Yes, of course, we still need to address the left back issue at some stage if we get the opportunity to bring in a world-class left back. But there are far more pressing matters, such as Dejan Lovren, such as Simon Mignolet, because people will point, and they have pointed to me on Twitter and say, you know, why are you giving Moreno another chance suddenly? And yet you're saying Mignolet's had enough chances, Lovren's had enough chances. But I think Tom's in agreement with me here. At least we've seen some progression from Moreno, and that has been a very, very positive progression this season. So for me, this agenda, this desire to say, I told you so, is beyond infuriating, and people just need to give him the credit he deserves. Yes, okay, you can want a new left back. We all want the best left back in the world. We all want to win titles, whatever. But if we don't give him credit for the development he's making, then we might as well just kick him out the door now.
I think it's I do completely agree with you, Leanne, and I can hear Guy Drinkle punching the air as he's listening to this pod. I think people are so quick to say Klopp hangs on to players for too long. Klopp trusts players too much. Look at X player, look at Y player, they haven't improved at all. And yet when a player does improve, they don't ignore it, but they say, like, you know, these are sorts of players that Klopp should not be trusting, should not be improving, but they're ignoring the fact that someone like Moreno, who Klopp did give a second chance to, has improved, has demonstrated that he deserves a second chance and has taken that second chance. I just want to quickly throw some stats in, because we were talking about the left side being targeted, or Moreno being particularly, not weak, but that sense of it. In the Premier League this season, in terms of where the shots have come from, 71% of shots from Liverpool have come down the middle, 15% down the left-hand side, 14% down the right. So that's pretty negligible. And actually, 15% of the shots coming from the left-hand side is the third lowest in the Premier League. Although there's certainly a case to be argued that the fact that 71% comes from the middle is right. Alarming. But that's an entirely different point. The point is that the left-right comparison, in terms of shots, in terms of where the shots come from, Moreno doesn't tend to concede too many shots compared to the right-hand side. I can't get the cross stats up, but those are just where the shots end up coming from. So that's just a little thing that I thought would be relevant to this discussion. So, Adam, do you think Moreno has lifted himself out of that category. I know you kind of got at it. I think you said he's, yeah, you know, he's not made,
he's,
but do you think he's an example of someone who has stepped up and has vindicated Klopp's decision to put faith in him?
I'll put it this way. If Liverpool return to consistent trophy winning ways at some point in the near future, I can see Albi on the team and in the squad, but it's also just goes along with what we were talking about earlier, right? He's playing every single game, and that's a little weird so, because every game doesn't call for an Albi. You know, he's got his own special brand that he brings to each match, and I don't think every match really calls for that. And maybe you're right. Maybe the issue is that we signed Robertson and he wasn't. I guess, you know, if you believe what people were saying in May, then maybe like Sessegnon was our real target there, and Robertson was just like, you know, we need somebody to plug in there just in case Moreno's not ready. I'm not sure. So yeah, I mean, like I said, if we're playing in a way where we can let him bomb forward, great. You know, I'm sure he can. The way that he's played this year, he showed that he can be certainly effective that way. It's hard to switch out. And I think you're seeing that with across the board with a lot of these players. It's just they're not as effective if we're not going all out gegenpressing. And for me, he's one of them. But it doesn't mean that he doesn't have a purpose at the club. I mean, certainly it's always going to be part of the Klopp system to want to press sometimes. And Albi has shown that he's good at that. Yeah, certainly you got to say against Chelsea, he was one of the strongest defenders in terms of trying to do something against Eden Hazard. So that was impressive. But yeah, for me, we still probably haven't found the answer there. But he's been inspiring for what he's come back from, I'll put it that way.
So, Leanne, I'll finish up with you on this one then. We've talked about Robertson, so we've kind of flirted about the Robertson question a bit. Do you think Robertson should be getting more game time in this team? That's not necessarily, because for me, I think the Robertson question is not necessarily the same as the Moreno question. I think you can say Robertson deserves more minutes without discrediting Moreno. So do you think Robertson should be getting more minutes in this team? Do you think Klopp needs to rotate him in a bit more? Or do you think it's as simple as Moreno was never intended to be the long-term solution, but has just played his way into form where he's undroppable at the moment?
For me, I'm not sure what's going on with Robertson. And as I said earlier, I'm not sure whether it's a case of Klopp doesn't think he's ready in terms of he's still adapting to Liverpool's style. But I did think it was quite surprising that we didn't see him against Stoke, because for me, that was the perfect opportunity. We'd played four games in 11 days, something like that. And so, you know, you're thinking, surely that's the time we see Robertson. Surely that's the time we give these players a rest. But possibly it comes into this argument. Yep.
Sorry, what I would say is that with the Spartak game, a big one next week, he might play Robertson at the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And also what's important to note is it does perhaps feed into this argument that actually we've seen a lot more from Moreno. Klopp is happy with how Moreno is doing, and so he doesn't want to disrupt that momentum, or because he had that poor performance against Sevilla, he wants now to get Moreno to regain his confidence. And I think Robertson is a good signing. I want to see more of him, and I think we will see more of him. It's just a case of finding the right time, and I think over the period of the next couple of weeks, couple of months, we will see a lot more of him. It's a shame as well that we're out of one of the cup competitions, because that's another scenario where we would have seen him play and seen the likes of Ejaria and Gruitch, which we talked about earlier.
Okay, so I think that's pretty much everything on Moreno. I think we've covered this topic really, really well, and it's a really, really interesting one to look at going forward. And I suppose we'll see if Robertson does get more minutes around the Christmas period. But I guess it's one of those that maybe won't be sold this season. Maybe we'll wait and see where we are this time next year, who's the first choice left back then. I know there's been some links with left-backs in the January window, which I guess we'll see. So I think that's pretty much everything. Adam, is there anything you wanted to plug? Thank you very much for coming on. And you've written a really good article, and I look forward to seeing how that goes down in the next few days, and I look forward to seeing what's coming up in the future for you. So is there anything else you want to plug other than just your article?
Yeah, just this article. It should be coming out at the same time as the pod, and it's called Have Liverpool Learned How to Close? And that's pretty much it. I would just put in a plug for AI Pro. I definitely have enjoyed listening to that this week.
Leanne, anything you wanted to plug this week?
I'll have an article coming out in the next few days, probably about Divock Origi, or you know, this idea that people aren't necessarily giving players the credit for progression. Sorry, Adam.
I can take it. It's all right.
I've also got one that I need to say sorry, Adam, for. I've got one coming up about how people need to stop criticizing Klopp for every single little thing and just accept that sometimes not everything he does is wrong. Like, he can make a team selection without it being criticized. He can rotate players without it being criticized. He can make substitutions at the 80th minute without everyone going ape. So I just think, yeah, it's just one of those I'm basically got where it's fine to criticize the manager and it's fine to have interesting discussions about the manager, but it just gets a bit boring when all everyone does is just keep criticizing and keep criticizing and keep criticizing and always spewing the same generic stuff. And my last ever article for Anfield HQ is up, my final match analysis on the Stoke game. Something new is coming, and I'm going to plug that next week, so that should be good fun to do. That's coming for AI, actually, obviously. The other thing, I just want to keep plugging this show. Every week I like to plug this show, because I think it's a really, really good show. Leanne, obviously, is here every week putting a lot of hard work into it. I put a lot of hard work into it as well. And writers like Adam, who come on every week, and, well, not every week, but we get people on every week, and people like Adam write every week, writing good, consistent quality articles that are thought-provoking. I don't always agree with everything everyone says, and I'm happy to say that I don't agree with everyone, but it always provokes discussion, and it's really good to keep getting these writers on. Even when we have a quieter week, there's always something good quality out there. So, yeah, just keep listening to this show. Thank you so much for coming on, Adam. Thanks as ever for hosting with me, Leanne. And thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week.
Hi, this is Gags Tandon. Thank you so much for listening to the show on the Anfield Index podcast channel. I just want to talk to you a little bit about AI Pro and what we're doing over on that part of the channel. It is the subscriber area for Anfield Index. We have expanded, added brand new shows, and taken, obviously, one of your favourites, the Under Pressure podcast. As well as the Under Pressure podcast, you'll find Tactics Weekly with Dan Rhodes and Paul Dalglish. You'll have Mulby on the Spot with Jan Mulby and Trevor Downey, absolutely magnificent show. Then we have the brilliant Peter Beardsley on the Legends Lowdown show with either John Buskell, myself, or Eddie. Then there's Nina's Euro Incision podcast, which comes every Champions League game. So after every game, there'll be usually a review of the entire game day. So not just Liverpool, but talking about German clubs, Italian clubs, maybe even Spanish clubs as well. So that's pretty cool. Media Matters with Sachin Nagrani and myself and Nina. Myself and Nina will kind of rotate with Sachin on that. It's a fusion of fan media and national media, talking to journalists and those within fan media that have done really well. So that's a good one. There's the AI Pro Plus podcast with post-match show pods and anything else that we can react to, like injuries or transfers, anything that anyone gets sacked or leaves. And then we have the interview with Trevor Downey as well, who will interview a player, a former player from Liverpool or manager from our history every month. You can find all of these shows on AnfieldIndex.com. All you need to do is go to AnfieldIndex.com/join. The subscription costs $4.99 a month or £49.99 a year. Yes, that's gone up now. You've missed out on the introductory offer of £39.99 annually. However, we have softened the blow a little by giving you a 7-day free trial for both packages. So either one, if you're interested in signing up annually or if you're interested in signing up on the monthly package, you can now get 7 days for free. You can listen to AI Pro for free. I just said that. For free. 7 days, free trial. Sign up, AnfieldIndex.com/join. If you've enjoyed anything we've done in the past, any free shows, I mean, we have done these for so long and not charged a penny. We've had adverts on them to try and make money back. We're now going this, you know, into a premium model. There's still lots of free stuff. So if you want to support us, you know, come and try that free trial out. If you like it, stick with us. And if you don't, then fair enough. But at least give it a go, because the content is absolutely smashing. There have been some brilliant pods since we started in October. You are missing out, really. You are. If you think the free side's good, you've heard nothing yet. Pro has gone another level, really, it has, and it's going to go keep getting better. And that 7-day trial come on, man, totally free. Go and try it out. If you've enjoyed anything we've done, you know, there's got to be that much of a trust. Go and give that free trial a go. AnfieldIndex.com/join. It's all there for you. There's two apps as well. You can actually log in via the iOS app or the Android app using your login details. You can also use Podcast or any other ones, you know, any other app you've got as well. So just go to AnfieldIndex.com/FAQ or AnfieldIndex.com/getting started, getting-started, and that'll tell you exactly how to get all that set up. But, you know, 7 days free. Go and give it a go. You know, just go and give it a go. It's fantastic stuff, a great offer for you, and I'm sure you will not be disappointed. Thank you so much for listening, and please do continue supporting. The more AI Pro grows, the more the free side will grow too for everybody else. So, yes, see you on the other side.
Podcast Network.